Chapter 11. From Good Mr. Forley, "Don't you, sir? Don't you, sir?" chimes in the man hoarsely, making a sort of gruff echo of himself, and chuckling after it, as if he thought he had made a joke. If Trottle had said no, the door would have been probably closed in his face. Therefore, he took circumstances as he found them, and boldly ran all the risk, whatever it might be, of saying yes. "Quite right, sir," says the woman. "Good Mr. Forley's letter told us his particular friend would be here to represent him, at dusk, on Monday the 13th, or, if not on Monday the 13th, then on Monday the 20th, at the same time, without fail. And here you are on Monday the 13th, ain't you, sir? Mr. Forley's particular friend, and dressed all in black." "Quite right, sir. Please to step into the dining room. It's always kept scoured and clean against Mr. Forley comes here, and I'll fetch a candle in half a minute. It gets so dark in the evenings now, you hardly know where you are, do you, sir? And how is good Mr. Forley in his health? We trust he is better, Benjamin, don't we? We are so sorry not to see him as usual, Benjamin, ain't we? In half a minute, sir, if you don't mind waiting, I'll be back with the candle. Come along, Benjamin. Come along, Benjamin," chimes in the echo, and chuckles again, as if he thought he had made another joke. Left alone in the empty front parlor, Trottle wondered what was coming next, as he heard the shuffling, scraping footsteps go slowly down the kitchen stairs. The front door had been carefully chained up and bolted behind him on his entrance, and there was not the least chance of his being able to open it to effect his escape without betraying himself by making a noise. Not being of the jarber sort, luckily for himself, he took his situation quietly as he found it and turned his time, while alone, to account by summing up in his own mind the few particulars which he had discovered thus far. He had found out, first, that Mr. Forley was in the habit of visiting the house regularly. Second, that Mr. Forley, being prevented by illness from seeing the people put in charge as usual, had appointed a friend to represent him, and had written to say so. Third, that the friend had a choice of two Mondays, at a particular time in the evening, for doing his errand, and that Trottle had accidentally hit on this time, and on the first of the Mondays, for beginning his own investigations. Fourth, that the similarity between Trottle's black dress, as servant out of livery, and the dress of the messenger, whoever he might be, had helped the error by which Trottle was profiting. So far, so good. But what was the messenger's errand? And what chance was there that he might not come up and knock at the door himself, from minute to minute, on that very evening? While Trottle was turning over this last consideration in his mind, he heard the shuffling footsteps come up the stairs again, with a flash of candlelight going before them. He waited for the woman's coming in with some little anxiety, for the twilight had been too dim on his getting into the house to allow him to see either her face or the man's face at all clearly. The woman came in first, with the man she called Benjamin at her heels, and set the candle on the mantelpiece. Trottle takes leave to describe her as an offensively cheerful old woman, awfully lean and wiry, and sharp all over, at eyes, nose, and chin, devilishly brisk, smiling, and restless, with a dirty false front and a dirty black cap, and short fidgety arms, and long hooked fingernails, and a naturally lusty old woman, who walked with a spring in her wicked old feet, and spoke with a smirk on her wicked old face, the sort of old woman, as Trottle thinks, who ought to have lived in the dark ages, and been ducked in a horse pond, instead of flourishing in the 19th century, and taking charge of a Christian house. "You'll please to excuse my son, Benjamin, won't you, sir?" says this witch without a broomstick, pointing to the man behind her, propped against the bare wall of the dining room, exactly as he had been propped against the bare wall of the passage. "He's got his inside dreadful bad again, has my son Benjamin. and he won't go to bed, and he will follow me about the house, upstairs and downstairs, and in my lady's chamber, as the song says, you know. It's his indigestion, poor dear, that sours his temper, and makes him so aggravating, and indigestion is a wearing thing to the best of us, ain't it, sir? Ain't it, sir? Chimes in aggravating Benjamin, winking at the candlelight like an owl at the sunshine. Trottle examined the man curiously, while his horrid old mother was speaking of him. He found my son Benjamin to be little and lean, unbuttoned up slovenly in a frosty old greatcoat that fell down to his ragged carpet slippers. His eyes were very watery, his cheeks very pale, and his lips very red. His breathing was so uncommonly loud that it sounded almost like a snore. His head rolled helplessly in the monstrous big collar of his greatcoat, and his limp, lazy hands pottered about the wall on either side of him, as if they were groping for an imaginary bottle. In plain English, the complaint of my son Benjamin was drunkenness, of the stupid, pig-headed, sottish kind. Drawing this conclusion easily enough, after a moment's observation of the man, Trottle found himself, nevertheless, keeping his eyes fixed much longer than was necessary on the ugly drunken face rolling about in the monstrous big coat collar, and looking at it with a curiosity that he could hardly account for at first. Was there something familiar to him in the man's features? He turned away from them for an instant, and then turned back to him again. After that second look, the notion forced itself into his mind that he had certainly seen a face somewhere, of which that sot's face appeared like a kind of slovenly copy. Where? Thinks he to himself, where did I last see the man whom this aggravating Benjamin, here, so very strongly reminds me of? It was no time. Just then, with the cheerful old woman's eye searching him all over, and the cheerful old woman's tongue talking at him, 19 to the dozen for Trottle, to be ransacking his memory for small matters that had got into wrong corners of it. He put by in his mind that very curious circumstance respecting Benjamin's face, to be taken up again when a fit opportunity offered itself, and kept his wits about him in prime order for present necessities. You wouldn't like to go down into the kitchen, would you? Says the witch without the broomstick, as familiar as if she had been Trottle's mother, instead of Benjamin's. There's a bit of fire in the grate, and the sink in the back kitchen don't smell to matter much today, and it's uncommon chilly up here, when a person's flesh don't hardly cover a person's bones. But you don't look cold, sir, do you? And then, why, Lord bless my soul, our little bit of business is so very, very little, it's hardly worth while to go downstairs about it, after all. Quite a game at business, ain't it, sir? Give and take, that's what I call it, give and take. With that, her wicked old eye settled hungrily on the region round about Trottle's waistcoat pocket, and she began to chuckle like her son, holding out one of her skinny hands, and tapping cheerfully in the palm with the knuckles of the other. Aggravating Benjamin, seeing what she was about, roused up a little, chuckled and tapped an imitation of her, got an idea of his own into his muddled head all of a sudden, and bolted it out charitably for the benefit of Trottle. I say, says Benjamin, settling himself against the wall and nodding his head viciously at his cheerful old mother. I say, look out. She'll skin you. Assisted by these signs and warnings, Trottle found no difficulty in understanding that the business referred to was the giving and taking of money, and that he was expected to be the giver. It was at this stage of the proceedings that he first felt decidedly uncomfortable, and more than half inclined to wish he was on the street side of the house door again. He was still cudgeling his brains for an excuse to save his pocket, when the silence was suddenly interrupted by a sound in the upper part of the house. It was not at all loud, it was a quiet, still, scraping sound so faint that it could hardly have reached the quickest ears, except in an empty house. Do you hear that, Benjamin? Says the old woman. He's at it again, even in the dark, ain't he? Perhaps you'd like to see him, sir. says she, turning on Trottle, and poking her grinning face close to him. Only name it. Only say if you'd like to see him, before we do our little bit of business, and I'll show Good Forley's friend upstairs, just as if he was good Mr. Forley himself. My legs are all right, whatever Benjamin's may be. I get younger, and stronger, and jollier, every day that's what I do. Don't mind the stares on my account, sir, if you'd like to see him. Him? Trottle wondered whether he meant a man, or a boy, or a domestic animal of the male species. Whatever it meant, here was a chance of putting off that uncomfortable give-and-take business, and, better still, a chance perhaps of finding out one of the secrets of the mysterious house. Trottle's spirits began to rise again, and he said yes, directly, with the confidence of a man who knew all about it. Benjamin's mother took the candle at once, and lighted Trottle briskly to the stairs, and Benjamin himself tried to follow as usual. But getting up several flights of stairs, even helped by the banisters, was more, with his particular complaint, than he seemed to feel himself inclined to venture on. He sat down obstinately on the lowest step, with his head against the wall, and the tails of his big greatcoat spreading out magnificently on the stairs behind him and above him, like a dirty imitation of a court lady's train. "Don't sit there, dear," says his affectionate mother, stopping to snuff the candle on the first landing. "I shall sit here," says Benjamin, aggravating to the last, "till the milk comes in the morning." The cheerful old woman went on nimbly up the stairs to the first floor, and Trottle followed, with his eyes and ears wide open. He had seen nothing out of the common in the front parlor, or up the staircase, so far. The house was dirty, and dreary and close-smelling, but there was nothing about it to excite the least curiosity, except the faint scraping sound, which was now beginning to get a little clearer, though still not at all loud, as Trottle followed his leader up the stairs to the second floor. Nothing on the second floor landing, but cobwebs above and bits of broken plaster below, cracked off from the ceiling. Benjamin's mother was not a bit out of breath, and looked all ready to go to the top of the monument if necessary. The faint scraping sound had got a little clearer still, but Trottle was no nearer to guessing what it might be than when he first heard it in the parlor downstairs. On the third, and last, floor, there were two doors, one, which was shut, leading into the front garret, and one, which was ajar, leading into the back garret. There was a loft in the ceiling above the landing, but the cobwebs all over it vouched sufficiently for its not having been opened for some little time. The scraping noise, plainer than ever here, sounded on the other side of the back garret door, and, to Trottle's great relief, that was precisely the door which the cheerful old woman now pushed open. Trottle followed her in, and, for once in his life, at any rate, was struck dumb with amazement at the sight which the inside of the room revealed to him. The garret was absolutely empty of everything in the shape of furniture. It must have been used at one time or other by somebody engaged in a profession or a trade which required for the practice of it a great deal of light, for the one window in the room, which looked out on a wide open space at the back of the house, was three or four times as large, every way, as a garret window usually is. Close under this window, kneeling on the bare boards with his face to the door, there appeared, of all the creatures in the world, to see alone at such a place, and at such a time, a mere mite of a child, a little, lonely, wizened, strangely clad boy, who could not at the most have been more than 5 years old. He had a greasy old blue shawl crossed over his breast, and rolled up, to keep the ends from the ground, into a great big lump on his back. A strip of something which looked like the remains of a woman's flannel petticoat showed itself under the shawl, and, below that again, a pair of rusty black stockings, worlds too large for him, covered his legs and his shoeless feet. A pair of old clumsy muffetees, which had worked themselves up on his little frail red arms to the elbows, and a big cotton nightcap that had dropped down to his very eyebrows, finished off the strange dress which the poor little man seemed not half big enough to fill out, and not near strong enough to walk about in. But there was something to see even more extraordinary than the clothes the child was swaddled up in, and that was the game which he was playing at, all by himself, and which, moreover, explained in the most unexpected manner the faint scraping noise that had found its way downstairs, through the half-open door, in the silence of the empty house. It has been mentioned that the child was on his knees in the garret when Trottle first saw him. He was not saying his prayers, and not crouching down in terror at being alone in the dark. He was, odd and unaccountable as it may appear, doing nothing more or less than playing at a charwoman's or housemaid's business of scouring the floor. Both his little hands had tight hold of a mangy old blacking brush, with hardly any bristles left in it, which he was rubbing backwards and forwards on the boards, as gravely and steadily, as if he had been at scouring work for years, and had got a large family to keep by it. The coming in of Trottle and the old woman did not startle or disturb him in the least. He just looked up for a minute at the candle, with a pair of very bright, sharp eyes, and then went on with his work again, as if nothing had happened. On one side of him was a battered pint saucepan without a handle, which was his make-believe pail, and on the other a morsel of slate-colored cotton rag, which stood for his flannel to wipe up with. After scrubbing bravely for a minute or two, he took the bit of rag, and mopped up, and then squeezed make-believe water out into his make-believe pail, as grave as any judge that ever sat on the bench. By the time he thought he had got the floor pretty dry, he raised himself upright on his knees, and blew out a good long breath, and set his little red arms akimbo, and nodded at Trottle. "There," says the child, knitting his little downy eyebrows into a frown. "Drat the dirt. I've cleaned up. Where's my beer?" Benjamin's mother chuckled till Trottle thought she would have choked herself. "Lord have mercy on us," says she, "just hear the imp. You would never think he was only 5 years old, would you, sir? Please to tell good Mr. Forley you saw him going on as nicely as ever, playing at being me scouring the parlor floor, and calling for my beer afterwards. That's his regular game, morning, noon, and night. He's never tired of it. Only look how snug we've been and dressed him. That's my shawl a-keepin' his precious little body warm, and Benjamin's nightcap a-keepin' his precious little head warm, and Benjamin's stockings, drawed over his trousers, a-keepin' his precious little legs warm. He's snug and happy, if ever a imp was yet. Where's my beer? Apostrophe say it again, little dear, say it again." If Trottle had seen the boy, with a light and a fire in the room, clothed like other children, and playing naturally with a top, or a box of soldiers, or a bouncing big India rubber ball, he might have been as cheerful under the circumstances as Benjamin's mother herself. But seeing the child reduced as he could not help suspecting, for want of proper toys and proper child's company, to take up with the mocking of an old woman at her scouring work, for something to stand in the place of a game, Trottle, though not a family man, nevertheless felt the sight before him to be, in its Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.